In 3, 2, 1. What's going on, folks? Welcome to 34 Questions. I'm your host, 34. And tonight, we have my future cousin-in-law, Brian, in the building. How you doing tonight, Brian?
What's going on? It's good to finally be here. Let me just put my puppy down real quick.
No worries.
I'm doing great, man. It's been a long time coming. I think we've rescheduled this like 2 times now, so I'm really excited to get to talk to you and to be a part of this, and it's awesome to support the future fam. So yeah, happy to be here.
I appreciate you, man. I know, you know, our lives get busy, so making time is very precious to me, and I understand what it takes to kind of pencil me in your life. So I definitely appreciate you being here. So thank you again. For you and for the folks out there who are unfamiliar with the flow of the show, let me just break it down real quick. We typically start things off with a warm-up. After the warm-up, we'll jump into the icebreaker. And then after the icebreaker, we'll get into the main meat of the podcast, where we'll spin the wheel of fate. Whichever number it lands on, that's how the conversation will kind of flow. And then after all that, we'll finish out with some closeout questions. Sound good to you, Brian?
Sounds great.
Show, man. Well, before we do all that, I just really want to ask, how you been? Been doing well? You've been doing great. How you been lately, man?
I've been feeling like an adult for the first time in my life. It's kind of nuts. I'm 33. I'm forgetting my age. That's how old I am. I turned 34 this year, getting married to your lovely cousin, Francine. Got a dog that's a year old. I'm maturing in my career. I finally got the title that I've wanted for, you know, over 6 years in the making now.
Congrats, man.
Living with my fiance, doing big things, and they're the big milestones. Like, I got, you know, I'm investing in the S&P 500. I'm starting to do boring stuff with my money now, you know, like that's what adults do, you know?
I don't think investing is boring. Now, that can be a write-in.
Well, the S&P 500 is pretty boring. It's not Tesla.
I feel you. I got to ask maybe some advice from you at some point about that.
Please.
Because I know I've heard the S&P 500 be something. I know my friends also, invest in it. And they tell me it's probably one of the safer bets. I don't know if that's true or not. But like, if you just be patient, let it grow year over year, it should be solid. But, you know.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
it's basically, the way I look at it is you're betting on the country, because it's just taking the top 500 companies, doesn't matter where they are, and those top 500 companies are always going to compete with each other. They'll change and some will fall out of the 500, but you're still going to hold on to the top 500. And I kind of view it as like a secondary retirement fund, right?
Oh, for sure.
It's something, so, you know, we're talking like 30 years out, but I don't trust the government to give me any Social Security. I'm thinking of the worst case scenario, and I'm expecting taxes to be like, you know, 50% when we're that age. I'm trying to hole up something to where I don't have to live on rice and beans when I retire.
I hear you. And it sounds like I need to get more advice from you at some point.
Anytime.
Appreciate it. You mentioned, you know, adulting. What's been, I guess, you know, what's something that you had to let go in order to start adulting, would you say?
That's a good question. I think video games was the biggest one that I had to kind of drop. Like, I'm at a point in my life, and I love video games. Like, I work in design and I'm a writer. So any great video game like Red Dead Redemption 2, it takes so much of your life. But as someone who is not only a fan of the medium, but a fan of quality writing, that kind of stuff shines through in video games. The moral decisions that you have to make, like, I just get really wrapped up in the storyline of video games. But now it's just gone so low on my priority list that I still find some time to play. Because again, I love a good story. But there's always like this sense of guilt when I play for like more than an hour at a time.
That
wasn't the case before.
Yeah, you kind of feel like, man, I should be doing something more tangible or productive. I know what you mean. I know the last game I played was Spider-Man on PC, right? Like, I know it came out for PS5 for a long time. And then I finally was like, cool, it's on sale, let me purchase it. but it stayed in my hard drive for a long time until I had some free time and like, yo, let me play this. And I took a lot of my time and I was like, oh, Sam, I really want to finish this. That was a great story. I don't know if you played that one, but
yeah, I just beat the second one.
I got you. I'm waiting for PC version. So until I get there.
It's great, man. But I had to chunk it out, you know, like I had to play it an hour at a time. You know, I couldn't play it every single night and like first world problems, right? Like whatever. But that is something that was always tied to my childhood. Like that's kind of how I kept my childhood going. Hold on one second, my dogs. But I couldn't just like, I couldn't binge it, right? Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah. And video games were tied to my childhood in a way where I always wanted a new game, but we didn't have money to always get the new game. So now that I have a little bit of money, I feed my inner child by getting those games and buying those games. So my backlog is ridiculous and I'll probably never get to them. And I don't even finish every game that I have. I don't even start every game that I have, but I guess like that's my way of, that's my way of like feeding my inner child, I guess. But that's slowing down too. Trying to find more tangible stuff to do with my life. Like you were saying, like, practicing bass guitar. I just picked up a bass guitar on sale last year and I've been learning bass. I've been playing guitar for like 20 years. Trying to get back into writing, been cooking a lot of new stuff, just, you know, constantly trying to learn and grow and just feed my hobbies and my passions.
Nah, for sure, man. And, you know, as we get older, we kind of find a way to kind of organize all that, right? Kind of feeding different parts of our lives just to feel complete, feel whole. So I hear you. It's good to find balance. But for sure, dog, I think it's time for us to move on to the warm-up. My first question for you in the warm-up is, what would you like the audience to know about you? I feel like we haven't really gotten to know each other too much since we don't see each other too often. So, you know, you could be talking to me or you could be talking to the audience, but what would you like them to know about you?
I don't really know your audience, so I don't really care what your audience thinks about me. But I'll pitch myself to you. I think that'd be a nice twofer, right?
For sure.
I love to find the humor in life. I think that life is taken way too seriously by way too many people, and that's not to say life doesn't have value. I just think that we're in an age where everything that is said, everything that is done is under such scrutiny. And I've tried to cultivate a personality where I do try to lend some poignancy to conversations, but I also like to remind people like, we're all gonna die. None of this is permanent. And you know, you need to come to terms with that and not view it as something that is bad, but something that makes life even more precious. And you're already here. So let's party. Let's not make it a drudgery. Let's not make it even more of a struggle than it already has to be. Have some fun. Have some laughs. Sometimes at my own expense. sometimes at other people's expense. Like I love somebody falling down. That's one of the funniest things. Like if I see somebody falling down and like not just falling, but like, you know, hurting themselves.
Comically
falling. It's a little funny. It's a little, you know, you're laughing right now.
No, yeah. Because I've been that person to fall all the time.
But yeah. It's so, you know, and like, I'm allergic to taking oneself too seriously and taking life too seriously. I think that humor is a great way to process trauma. I think humor is a great way to alleviate situations that can be a little bit too intense. And granted, like some things in life require intensity, some things in life require a pause and heaviness, and I'm not a complete psycho, but I think for the most part it's my approach to how I communicate through comedy or laughter or sarcasm. Even if every joke or whatever doesn't land, it's helping me get through life. It's helping me get up in the morning again. So I'll try to be more serious in this conversation, but just know I'm prone to slip in something every once in a while. But that's just because I like to have fun and I like to not make life so grave, I guess.
I hear that, man. And I'm encouraging you to just be yourself, man. There's no, you know, perfect way I need my guests to be. I just want you to feel comfortable and being yourself. In a similar vein, you know, the way I kind of keep things in perspective is, yeah, I feel very insignificant, right? In the whole grand scheme of things, I'm a grain of salt in this vast thing. So what came before me, what's going to come after me, it's all part of that too. So yeah, I just really just try to enjoy where my life in the moment, where I'm at, be present as much as possible. I know there's value in like reflecting on the past and preparing for the future, but for the most part, if things start rattling me, I'm like, okay, let me just ground myself in where I'm at today, you know. And I love humor.
That's why dogs are so happy.
What's that?
That's why dogs are so happy.
Hey, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean?
They're in the here and now. If they peed on the floor and you're too late to tell them don't do that, it's useless. They already forgot it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I wish
they don't dwell on the past.
I wish I had that kind of, you know, I guess not memory loss, but just a way to let go of things and keep moving.
We could all use a little amnesia, sure. Some
amnesia. I was thinking about, you know, I don't know if you believe in hypnosis or if that's a real thing, but I wanted to try.
Never tried it.
And be like, yo, can you help me with my smoking? You know, like tell me I'm not a person that smokes and maybe I should stop doing it. I don't know. But yeah,
I've heard people use it for addiction, and I've heard that it's had positive results.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't really know if I believe in the quote unquote science of it, but I think an argument can be made for anything, honestly. If it helps, it helps, as long as it's not harmful. And I don't think hypnosis is really harmful unless they make you undress in their office or something, like, you know.
I hear you. Yeah. question about humor, right? Do you like stand-up comedy and, you know, comedians and stuff like that?
I do, but I kind of feel like it's cringy now. I feel like a lot of like comedy podcasts are like cash grabs, or they're just kind of like talking about whatever, and it feels like a really crappy stand-up special, you know what I mean? I really love curated material. I really love hearing somebody with a point of view. I love the attempt at something different. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a George Carlin or Richard Pryor or something. It doesn't have to be like politically poignant, you know. Like, one of my favorite comedians right now is Shane Gillis, because he's just a bro and he's very, I don't know if you know who he is.
I don't.
He's hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend, so if you're into show, you'll see. But, you know, he's very silly. I wouldn't call him poignant, but he's able to find humor in dumb things. Like, and he says things like, ew, dude, and I'm butchering it, but but he has a very unique flavor and a very unique perspective. And I respect the craft that it takes to stand out from the noise, if that makes sense. 'Cause I feel like so many stand-up comedians now complain about cancel culture, and it's like, are you canceled if I can hear you talking? You know what I mean? Like,
I hear you.
I'm hearing you talk about cancel culture every week, and you're making money off of talking about cancel culture, and you're complaining about cancel culture. So are you really canceled? I don't know. Like, who really gets canceled? People who go to jail. Mm-hmm. So like Harvey Weinstein got canceled.
For sure, right? For sure.
And like Kathy Griffin is the only comedian I could think of who got canceled. Do you remember her?
I do remember Kathy Griffin, and I remember the headlines, but you know how the news cycle is just so saturated. I forgot why she got canceled.
She held Donald Trump's head up on a, like, beheaded head or whatever, you know, and that was like political suicide and career suicide. So that's the only one I can think of, really. So anyway, all that to say, I think the Joe Rogans of the world have really created a terrible, terrible space for comedy. Not politically, like, they're not funny, and it's kind of like a content mill. Like, they're just filling up time, but they think that they're funny, and I don't, and they're not.
I hear you. Yeah, in the maybe a few years ago, I was listening to some Rogan podcast, but yeah, it's not like something I search for nowadays. I think with comedy in general, like I I'm a very consume a lot of media, right? Like I watch a lot of TV, I watch a lot of movies. So that's where I get some of my comedy. What I've been really enjoying though is like finding people on Reddit or on Instagram, like small time comedians who are like putting their content out there, and it, when it catches grabs my attention, I'm like, oh snap, I gotta like find his special or like listen more to this guy. And now that I kind of know where you're at with it, maybe I'll shoot you a link to this one dude. It's Mike something. I don't know, his the way he delivers it is so like casual, and I'm just like surprised at like the things he says, but it's hard for me. I'm like not doing a great job because it's one of those things you got to see for yourself.
Totally. Yeah
I'll share it with you, man.
Yeah, for sure.
But I got you.
Thank you.
My next question for you in the warm-up is, how would you like to be honored? So if there is a way I could express the energy you possess, what sort of act could I do? And let me know if you need more clarification on the question.
I think you left it open-ended on purpose so I can interpret it in my own way, but...
Ooh, good catch.
I love when people laugh at my stupid jokes because it means they're very polite and kind.
Oh, you know, like, I hear you.
Like I know when something that I say is not funny and I'm just like trying, and then people are still kind enough to like give me a pity laugh, like then I will stop trying to be funny and be more genuine because I'm like, okay, you gave me the time of day. And I feel like that's a form of honoring. It's like you're kind enough to like try to humor me, you know?
Word. Yeah.
And that's, you know, I feel like that's a really small nicety, but it's something that speaks to somebody's character, you know, even if it's like a captive, even if it's like a captive audience, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It allows me to like drop my guard a little bit, and, you know, it, like comedy is almost like a shield too, right? Yeah, it's not just a way to go through life, but it's like humor can be a shield. And even if I don't think that what I said was funny, and I know what I said wasn't funny, but I get a pity laugh, that's kind of nice, you know. That's like a tiny little bit of honor. If not honor, then grace, you know.
For sure. Damn, I didn't know that could be like a, maybe for you, a little litmus test for people when you meet them to see if and when you say the joke, is it something where you're like, oh, I know I'm gonna say something that's not that great, or you only realize it after the fact if you've said it and you're like, oh man, that was not great.
You know what's funny is when it comes to humor, it's very off the cuff and in the moment. Like I'm not like calculating a joke. It's just I feel like I've consumed a lot of media. I've read a ton. I feel like I have a very refined sense of what I like, and I keep up on pop culture, and I'm into history, and there's just a lot of stuff that swirls around in my head, and I expel that, and so it'll just be like in the moment. Like I'll give you an example. Like at work the other day, somebody was talking about they went to Germany, and they were talking about how the German waiters, they ask you, they don't ask if you want still or sparkling water. They say, do you want water with or without gas? And immediately I associated Germans and gas. And I said, well, that's horrible. How could, what, have they not learned their lesson? Like, why would they say such a thing? You know?
I got you.
And because it was as soon as she said gas, like that just came to me and I just let it rip. And I knew that to say that in a work setting is probably not the best thing, but like I had a relationship with this person, and
yeah,
I could gauge that it was fine, and like I wasn't obviously being serious, and I was just like yes anding her thing. But it wasn't like, oh, she said something about Germany, how can I insert humor into this? It's just my natural default is like, oh, I heard something, I made an association, like let it fly, you know.
I got an example for me in the workplace where I said a joke that I wasn't sure after I said it. So the example is like, today one of my students was like, oh, you know, I have a black coworker and one of my black students, the student was saying, oh, see, they always keep us in the fields or whatever, like something like that, right? Because they were making a joke. So
is that a new slang term? Like they're just keeping them like working or something?
I can't remember the exact context of what it was said, but I just remembered being around and they said that, and I'm like, I said something like, oh, you know, the fields have just changed nowadays, right? Like, it's not, we're in the fields anymore, but they're still making us work or still slaves in a different way. And the way the kids reacted and my coworker reacted, they're like, oh my God. Like, and then in my mind, I'm like, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that it's a, you know, I see the struggle. And then, but they were just so taken aback from what I said. And I'm like, damn, like, I hope I didn't offend anyone. But I think they were
just the word.
Yeah.
It's the word. Like, I feel like our critical thinking skills are kind of deteriorating because people just, they hear the word and then they're like, you know, but because the word has so much, the word has so much inherent meaning and bias and politics within it that people are afraid of the word itself, which I hate that that's where we're at. Mm-hmm. But the context of the word being used is that, like you said, you were agreeing. And maybe the point being made was an extreme, but they started out with the field. Like, we were already in that vein. So it's like, not to say like we should be pointing fingers, like, or you started it, but it's like, are we thinking about this in the same way or are we not?
No, yeah. No, for sure. And you know, luckily enough, my coworkers and the students, they know, you know, the root of who I am. So they didn't they didn't think it was like offensive, right? They were just like surprised that I said it. And I guess, you know, the situation. But now I'm thinking to myself, like, damn, like, do I have to be more careful? Or I hope that people know that, you know, the kind of person I am and won't find it. So I guess it's something I'll find out as the days come by and like more things pop up. But I just remember,
if you're decent at your job, you can get away with anything.
I gotcha. That's an interesting thing. Sometimes I think when you're not decent at your job, you can still get away with life.
From my experience. You might be right. And you can't get away with anything. I don't want anybody to misconstrue that.
Yeah.
That's not what I mean.
please don't cancel it.
Don't cancel me as I say it on your podcast.
But I hear you, man. And now I know a good way to honor you. Now we know as an audience. My last question for you in the warm-up, man, is on a scale from 1 to 10, how well do you know yourself?
You know what's crazy about that question? Any answer is true. Like, a 1 is true, and a 10 is true. Mm. A 5 is true. You know what I mean?
Elaborate, yeah.
A 1 in the sense of I don't know what my future holds and how I'm going to be able to respond to everything because of who I am innately. All right. There are some, like, life always throws you curveballs, so you can't really account for everything that you, there's maybe some things in me that I haven't discovered yet because life has not required me to reach down deep into those different parts of myself. Right.
I gotcha.
10 because I've been with me my entire life, you know, and who there might be one or two people that know me better than I know myself. I think my mama and Francine probably knows me better than I know myself, or she will over the years. She already knows me very well. Maybe my brother, but a 10 in the sense of I know my sense of humor, I know my philosophy, I know my beliefs, I know the things on paper about myself that have not been stressed or tested. You know what I mean? Like, I know the theory of Brian.
I like that. Yeah. For sure.
And then a 5 because really, like, I'm in the middle of my life, so there's so much more to know, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. Usually my go-to response is 5, or, and I, the way I kind of explain it is like, at my best moments, I feel like I know myself the most. And then at my worst moments, I feel like I don't know myself at all. But I also hear your perspective as far as like, you know, I do feel like I've been with me my whole life. So there's certain things I'm like, yeah, this is who I am. And then there's a lot of things that I'm like, I haven't even grown into or haven't had certain experiences. So I don't know how I would react just yet. For you, when's the last time you would say you surprised yourself? Where you were like, oh, shit, that's me? I didn't know I could do that. Or, yeah, some that kind of sense.
Yeah. I did something bad yesterday that I didn't think I was capable of. And this is like a total Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of bad. Like this is like it's a boring bad.
Okay.
So I don't want to oversell it. But I also like, okay. So Francine ordered a couple of Amazon packages.
Okay.
We live in apartment 8. The packages that we got were addressed to apartment 6.
Okay.
So I go outside and I see, oh, they're in apartment 6. Now, mind you, I'm running a little late to work. And so apartment 6 is like way over there.
Okay.
It's not as close as it sounds. And I just want to get to my car and drive up to the city where I work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I take the packages and I drop them off at somebody else's, in front of somebody else's, not apartment 6, apartment 7's
apartment,
thinking she's really nice and she'll see the packages and she'll take care of it for me, right?
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, Francine comes back and she's like, we had packages delivered. And I said, oh yeah, I saw those. And I told her what I did. And it turned out that the neighbor, I texted the neighbor like, hey, did you get a couple of packages today? Because I was on my way out and I noticed that you had 2 packages on your front, in your front door. Yeah. Were they ours? Already knowing. Like, I'm already like, I'm insane. Like, there's no reason for this much deception. Like, this is crazy. But like, I'm in too deep. Like, I don't want to acknowledge that that's what I did to have her do my dirty work. Like, it's all so petty and like small, but it's and so unnecessary. But long story short, the Amazon guy switched apartment 6 and apartment 8, and apartment 6 dropped off our packages, so it was all good in the end. But the amount of unnecessary back and forth resulted in a very annoyed fiance, and I kind of surprised myself. I was just like, I was trying to not inconvenience myself and get up to work earlier, and then I ended up just like involving the neighbor, and like Francine thought that our package was stolen, and it was a mess.
I got you.
So I learned my lesson.
For sure, man. And I think that's the first time I heard someone use that in a different way. Like, damn, I didn't know there was something that I could do that was worse, I guess, or something wrong. But I
hear mildly annoying and inconveniencing people. it wasn't malicious. It was just kind of like, I gotta go. This isn't gonna hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
I feel like that happens to me a lot too, man, where I think I'm doing the right thing and then it ends up being the wrong thing. Because as much as I like to say I'm not judgmental, I realize that I am judgmental, but in a different way. Like, I'm not thinking the worst of people. I'm always thinking the best of them. And then, but that always bites me in the butt too, you know, like, so yeah, there's a lot of examples of that.
You mean like putting people up on pedestals and getting disappointed when they don't live up to those expectations?
You know, that's happened for sure. I think
me too.
For me, it's definitely like, I don't know, the trusting in people, right? Like, I know, I don't think this was a bad thing, and I still don't think it was, but one of my examples is in college. I was there in a room with my, or in a house with my housemates. They were asleep. I was the only one up playing video games, you know, just chilling. This was like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., someone doorbells on our door. And this guy in his boxers looks like he got just jumped, right? And he's just like, can I, like, your porch light was on. Can I come in? And I'm like,
oh, man.
And me being
in his boxers?
In his boxers, just his boxers, right? Just his boxers.
Oh, my God.
And like, he looked like he got jumped. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, I need to help this person. Like, my trust was like, oh, this guy looks like he needs help. Oh yeah, come in, sit on the couch. Let me get you some water.
Oh my God, bro.
Exactly. And he's like, you know, he's drunk. I could tell he's drunk. And he like,
this keeps getting better.
So he's like, can I use your phone? And I'm all like, sure, guy. Here's my phone, call whoever you need to call. Calls his people. Da, da, da. He gets picked up. Nothing bad happened. Right? Nothing bad happened. I later on found out that there was a bar down the street. He ran a tab up and he didn't have any money. So the bouncers were like, okay, well, we'll take everything you have and beat you up. And you could try to.
Including his pants?
Yeah, they took everything. They took everything. And they had him just walking down the street. And like, that's why he's like, oh, I saw your porch light. And you know, that's why I knocked on your door. So anyways, the next morning I tell my housemates and they're like, what the fuck were you thinking? Like, that could have went any other way, right? But man, I was just like, I saw somebody in need. I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Bro, but yeah. He was drunk. He had no pants. He looked like he was in a fight. Like, you can use my phone, but you're staying outside, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man.
No, but all that to say, your empathy was... your empathy was right, it was right to a fault, because you put yourself in a very precarious situation.
Not for sure, man. I totally agree. Looking back at it, I understand. I'm still trying to get a better hold of it. I think there's, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but I know there's like a hero complex, and I think I might have that. I want to save everybody. So yeah, I think that those things kind of played into it. But I learned a little bit more. And I think yeah, the way I would approach it is like, you could sit on our porch, but I can't let you in the house, kind of thing.
But yeah, hey, that was wild. You learned. That's what's important.
Exactly.
That's how you get through life.
I hear that, man. But yeah, that's my story. But
that's amazing.
I think we have finally made it to the part where we head over to the icebreaker. So in this icebreaker, you'll have 34 seconds to do in either a this or that or a word association. Where would you?
Let's do this or that.
Sure. Gotcha.
You know what? No, I'm a writer. Let's do word association.
Ooh. All right. It's just a, you know, first word or phrase that comes to mind.
Yep.
And I'll ask you, I'll follow up after 34 seconds. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1, difficult.
Work.
Relax.
Fiance.
Missing.
Childhood.
Knowledge.
Wealth.
Culture.
Art.
Destiny.
Luck.
Brilliant.
Light.
Passion.
Fruit.
God.
Us.
Show. Let me go with, you said destiny, you said luck. Why did luck come to mind?
Because you kind of make your own destiny, and you have to do the work to get to where you're at. But I also believe that we're a bunch of atoms just smashing into each other at the end of the day. I think things only ever happen one way in life, but there's a million, quadrillion different ways that one thing could happen. Like a plane engine could smash on my face right now, like Donnie Darko. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Oh, I have. Yeah, but, for sure.
So you know what I'm talking about. Like, life is chaos, and human beings are very good at weaving a story and making sense out of their past, what happened in the past. But think of everything that happened up to this point. I don't know if this is true for you, but it's true for me. It feels like it just kind of like wound up here. Like from early on, it feels like you're kind of ping-ponging around these decisions. And as you get older, the ping-ponging gets like, you know, narrower and narrower until it looks like a straight line. But that was all chaos to get to this point. it was, you were making the best decisions at the time without necessarily the end goal in mind. And I'm talking about like teenage, you know, I'm talking about like your early years. Like that's all, sure. That's all chaos. And in a sense, as you get older, and not everybody might agree with this, but your options get limited. You're only so good at so many things. And if you're lucky and you're smart, you can capitalize on those natural gifts or those learned skills and further your career, further your development, further your relationships, further your knowledge in a way that's beneficial to you. But so much of that is luck. And I think destiny is something that we all have, but luck defines so much of it at the same time.
I hear that, man. The way you kind of set that imagery in my mind, it makes sense. I definitely think I'm still more in my range, even though it's getting more narrow, I'm still pretty wide. still trying to figure it out. And sometimes I think maybe I have two things that are happening at parallel times. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I have to chew on that, but I want to appreciate that imagery that you just succinctly put it into. What do you feel like you feel like you're destined to do?
The way I pitch it in my interviews for jobs is, cause in my industry, like they want to know, like your soul is in this, like we own your soul. If you sign this contract and like everything you do when you wake up in the morning has to have like this philosophical drive behind it. It's what gets you up in the morning. It's not just that you're good at the job. It's that this is what you were born to do. But I think it rings true. Like it's not a lie. I want to use the power of the written word to distill very complex concepts into easy to understand information in order to give the everyday person the advantage and the ability to make the best decisions for themselves. So I've worked in the financial sector and I've worked in mental health space. Mm-hmm. And I believe that both of those spaces, outside of art, outside of like the intangible soul part of life, I think that those two things are the most tangible benefactors to human beings and their livelihood. Get your money right, or if not right, then at least efficient, and get your mental health right. And they're very complex topics. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to write for applications that deal with each of those subjects in a way that empowers people to make the best decision for themselves depending on where they're at in their journey. I also would love to write a book one day, but it wouldn't be a self-help book. It would be a satire because I need to feed that humor part of me too. But yeah, just if not changing the world, then leaving a little nugget of information for somebody to better themselves through my skill of the written word.
I hear that, man. And that's dope. That's dope. I hope, you know, all that manifests for you if you don't feel like it already has. I'm assuming, but I feel like all the work you've done at this point, it has, you know, helped change someone's world. I'm very big on people trying to change the world. But I realize as I get older, it's not really changing the entire world, but changing one person's world, because we're all like little universes in our own right.
You're changing my world right now. This interaction is adding to our stories, and it's changing us, and our neuroplasticity is getting more plastic. You know, I'm reaching out and talking about things that I don't normally talk about on a regular basis, and you know, maybe you're talking to somebody that you don't normally talk to about certain things. It's all growth, it's all changing all the time. It's chaos.
Are you familiar with chaos theory?
Yeah, like in the Jurassic Park sense.
So I found out about it because there's this Ryan Reynolds movie before he became a superstar. It's called Chaos Theory, and it was
I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, so that's how I was introduced to it. I haven't really dove into Jurassic Park, but The way I was introduced to it was like, it's a movie about this guy who was like 10 minutes late. And because he was 10 minutes late, his whole life changed. Like things were just like falling, you know, it was chaos, you know? So that's, I actually rewatched the movie because I forgot how they tied it back or if he ever got his life back in order. But yeah, that's kind of where my mind's at. But anyways, I just wanted to bring that up because you brought up chaos again.
I don't even think that's a theory. I think that's real life. Well, it stands to reason. If there's a car crash 10 minutes before you arrive to a scene, if you had left 10 minutes later, you may have been in that car crash, you know?
Yeah. It could have been a lot of things could have been different.
I put it this way. A lot of stuff has to go right for you to even make it into work in the morning. A lot of things. A lot of things have to happen for you to even be alive. Think about all the stuff happening in your body. Like thousands of things all have to go right. And some people believe it's God at work. I think it's just I think it's a lot of little miracles. A lot of little miracles within this crazy realm of chaos.
And I mean, I know I do. I definitely, what's it called? I underappreciate it, or I take it for granted a lot of the time, you know. And I wish I could spend more time appreciating things, but I feel like I end up just being so focused on the next thing, or like I got to do X, Y, and Z to get this goal of mine.
Well, I'll tell you, man. When I worked in mental health, one of the best, most corny sayings, but it's totally true, is gratitude is the attitude. Like there's just something about putting that energy of thankfulness that reaffirms the beauty of life, you know.
I get that.
And taking time out of your day, even if it's just a minute, to just be like, oh man, I love my dog, I love my podcast, you know, I love my hat, you know, just I'm glad I have the money to afford this hat. Just little things like that.
For sure. There's this audiobook I've been listening to, and I just kind of want to see if you could probably give me some perspective. It's The Art of Not Giving a Fuck, right? Like that's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lately, as I'm listening to it, I haven't finished it, but it hits kind of hard for me. There's a lot of things that I feel like was very relatable. And I don't want to feel like, oh man, this is the greatest book ever. So is there stuff that you feel like, you know, how can you help me kind of rein in that feeling of like, oh, this book is completely right about me and I should follow everything this book is telling me to do?
I didn't read it.
I gotcha.
I believe Francine did. And if I understand the book, the gimmick is its use of profanity to express kind of what I've been expressing, like we're all gonna die, it's all small potatoes, don't be obsessed with achievement, I believe is one of the things.
It is, yeah.
And I think that rings true for me, like yes and no, like I'm not here to say I have all the answers, because I am obsessed with achievement too, because I want to achieve things, but there's a nuance there. Like I'm not too disappointed if something that I do doesn't turn out the way that I want it, because as a creative, you have to, that's just part of it. Like not every idea you have is going to be great. Not every vision that you enact is going to 100% be what you want it to be. For every success, there's 100 failures. And I think, like who really was an overnight success? Elvis and like Seinfeld, you know?
I gotcha.
Like Tupac, right? Like even Tupac, he was part of the
digital underground. Yeah.
He was part of the digital underground.
Yeah.
And like they had some notoriety, but it wasn't Tupac. And like that's a bad example, but I think you know what I'm putting down. Like, there's so much work that goes on behind the scenes, and people toil in obscurity for years before they ever hit it big. But the idea that worked, and I think it's easy to feel inadequate in today's society where you have all of these high production value reminders on Instagram of people living their best life over and over and over again. It's like not even the same person. It's like this person's having the best day of their life, and then you go to the next one, this person's having the best day of their life. And it's, you know, it's just easy to see the curation as something that's organic and real. And I don't fault people for thinking that that's the way it is. But it's not.
No, I got you.
No, so for sure. Don't give a fuck.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying, man.
You got to care about the right things is what I would say. And I'm not here to proselytize or like tell you how to live your life, but like, as an American, you have the right to decide what you give a fuck about. I mean, I would like to think that all humans on Earth have that intrinsic right, but yeah, give a fuck about the right things. Give a fuck about giving back to your community, about your family, about your creative endeavors, and not about achievement for the sake of achievement. Like, make that achievement mean something from your heart and not like just so you have another notch, you know, on your bedpost or whatever. Yeah. Probably wasn't the best analogy, but you know what I mean?
People still do that. I think they do. But I hear you, man. Just a heads up, we got about 20-ish minutes left in the pod. Just want to thank you again for stopping by.
Sure.
And let's try to get some wheel questions up here.
Okay.
All right, man. So, like I said in the beginning, if there's anything too deep or too personal you don't want to talk about, feel free to pass. I'm not going to force you to answer any question you don't want to. And your first number is number 3. And what do you think you're the only one at doing X or thinking X, if anything?
Can you repeat the question? I don't know if I understood it.
What do you think you're the only one that does X or thinks X? Like, it almost feels like, I don't want to say lonely, but you know, like, man, why do I feel like I'm the only one that thinks this way or does this thing?
I don't know if I think that.
For sure.
I don't know if I feel like I'm special in that way, if that makes sense. Like, I assume if I have a good idea or a good quip, if somebody else has come up with it. Let me try and answer it in a different way.
I think you're answering that, man. That's a good answer, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm special. I like my books and my music, and I'm a slave to the arts and to media. I just really get a lot of value out of everything from visual art to musical art to, I mean, even video games, especially literature. I mean, I'm a writer and I love reading books, and I don't know if I'm the most well-read person, but I love me a good book. Maybe that's what it is, not to like put myself on a pedestal, but there are few people in my life that I can like drop different literary references to or like to speak about books at length. I'm lucky enough to work in an industry where my coworkers are all fairly well read, and you know, I could talk to them about Love in the Time of Cholera, and then we can move on to The Psychology of Money or The Talented Mr. Ripley or Game of Thrones, you know, like I've read all those books and more. And it's nice to have that community of people that I can bond with over our love of reading and like the themes that we get from it and how it's informed our lives. But I think in my everyday life, I'm friends with a lot of blue collar workers, actually. I don't really let techies into my, I don't commiserate with techies on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Gotcha.
It's not really where I come from. Like, my father was he was the business manager of a local union, local 355 pump plumbers and pipe fitters. He came here digging ditches for years, and he worked himself up through to the office. And you know, he lived the American dream. He was an immigrant from Guadalajara. So yeah. So and my mom was a public school teacher. Is a public school teacher of, you know, like almost 40 years or something.
Mm-hmm. Did you mind if I follow up from there?
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, since you brought up your parents, what's one thing you say, one quality you feel like you got from your dad and one quality you feel like you got from your mom?
That's a good question. One quality that I got from my dad is the humor, for sure. My dad likes to deflect with humor.
it's kind of annoying. Like if you want to talk to them about something serious, they'll just be like, ah, you know, yeah. Or like, you know, if I'm just like, why'd you do it that way? Like if we're working on the car or something and he just does something that's, that works, but is maybe a little, unsafe or unsound, maybe he'll be like, I'm a professional, you know, like that, that kind of humor.
I hear you.
And then one thing that I got from my mom, probably my empathy. She's, you know, she's taught kindergarten through third grade for, you know, almost four decades. And so you have to, in order to do that job well, you just have to have a kind heart. You have to be very patient and you have to meet everybody where they're at. And I think some of that kind of imbued itself within me. I like to, I'm not always perfect at it. Like my mom's basically an angel. But I'm not, I would say I got my sense of empathy for her. And even though I don't always live up to her shining example, I like to think that my, my baseline motivation for connecting with people, definitely comes from her.
Gotcha, man. Well, shout out to moms and pops, man.
They're the best.
Always, always. Well, for most folks, I don't want to,
if you got good ones, it's nothing beats it.
Yeah, man, for sure. For sure. I hear that. I realized what time it is right now and I want to be respectful for your time. So I think we'll move on to the closeout. But before we do that, there's this
extra. I got time, bro. It's okay. If you gotta go, that's fine.
Let's do one.
If you got a meeting, you know, if you gotta catch up on reruns of Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that, like go for it, bro. But I'm your subject. Whatever you want to do.
Well, let's give the wheel one more spin.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm glad you told me because then it makes me feel more comfortable. Sometimes, you know,
good.
Different guests have different limitations sometimes. But number 27 is, are there any memorable strangers in your life? Like anybody you feel like a story, you're like, oh, snap, that was a good person. And I've never seen them again after that.
That's crazy because at work we have a weekly kickoff where everybody like goes over what they're going to complete for the week. And there's always a fun question. And that was the fun question like a couple of weeks ago. So
nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do have a story. This stranger, this was right around the time I met Francine, actually. And the reason I know that is because at this time I was carrying around a Polaroid camera and just getting into photography a little bit. Sure. It was not one of those Instax. It was like a full Polaroid with like a big square picture that came out.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I remember I was walking in San Francisco. I think it was in I want to say it was either in, it wasn't in the Tenderloin, but Soma. I was in Soma, south of Market. And there was a homeless man in a wheelchair and there was a steep hill and he was having trouble getting up the hill because he was a little emaciated, hadn't eaten, it looked like. So I offered to roll him up the hill. I was just, you know, this isn't something I normally do. I don't want to like cast myself as like, mm-hmm. you know, Jesus or anything like that. But I was just, you know, right place, right time, I guess. And the spirit got me. And so I offered to roll him up the hill. And I rolled him up the hill. And we got to the top. And he was just telling me about his day. And but he was really kind. Like he had a physical look like he'd been through it. Obviously, he was homeless and didn't really eat. But he still had like a really kind demeanor and he was really, really grateful for help. Like that's always a humbling experience when you just see how grateful people are for like the smallest gesture. People who have been neglected, you know, for so long, just, like the smallest bit of humanity. Like they you know, they'll cry sometimes.
Yeah.
We got up to the top of the hill. And I said, great to meet you, bro. And I'm glad that, you know, I can help, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. Gave him like $5 for food or something. Mm-hmm. And then I asked him, like, can I take your picture? And he said, you want to take my picture? And I'm like, yeah. And I'll give it back to you. You can have it. Cause I like the guy doesn't have access to a mirror.
Yeah.
So I took the picture, and he had an awesome smile. Like he had a smile that I wasn't expecting him to have.
Yeah.
And I gave him a Polaroid, and we shook hands, and I was on my way. But I think about him every once in a while, just because such a little gesture made his day. And yeah. I can't say that I would have felt the same amount of gratitude if I were in his shoes in my lot in life, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was just a really humbling experience and a nice reminder to stay kind. And I think about that every once in a while.
That's dope, man. That's a great story. And thank you for sharing. Yeah, that beats my stranger story earlier.
Like, let it get mid. It might have been the same guy. I don't know.
Maybe, right?
You just thought about a bad night.
Yeah. No.
Oh, wait, he wasn't. Was he in a wheelchair? No, he wasn't.
Not at that time. You know, who knows? Who knows?
we'll never know.
That's a great story, man. And, man, I don't know if, like, how the universe works, but if you ever come across that dude again, you're like, that guy, dude, and maybe he'll connect you. Maybe he's still holding the picture. I don't know. I'm very optimistic in that way. I have really nice
stories. That would be grand.
Yeah. But I got you, man. Thank you for sharing. I think it's not that I want this conversation to end, man, but yeah, I do have something after this, so unfortunately.
I know you're a busy guy, so I appreciate you taking the time out too.
No worries, man. Let's hop into We're going to the closeout, but before we do that, there's this exercise called the 34th mantra. So basically it's I am, I can, I will. So I am blank, I can blank, I will blank. Whenever you feel like you have you're ready to let it rip, let me know, and I'll show you to the universe so you can speak it out to the universe.
I'm completing each phrase, right?
Yeah.
And I say it all at once?
Yeah, it's like I am, I can, I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, dog. Speak it out to the universe.
I am Brian. I can do better. I will laugh.
I got you, dog. Now, if you ever need a reminder, you'll have that little audio bite there. I tell people to set it as a ringtone.
I love it. That's amazing.
Right on, man. All right, dog. So here we are at the closeout portion. This next question is actually from my previous guest. Shout out to Isaiah Mostafa. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He was like a long shot, like an artist that I just kind of slid into the DMs, and he got back to me. So if you haven't heard his music, if you guys haven't heard his music, please check it out. Isaiah Mostafa.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. He's on SoundCloud.
He's on Spotify. He's on, you know, like all the major things.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. He has the YouTube and all that.
Okay.
But yeah, he's an up and comer, I believe. He's doing this 37-week challenge where he drops a new song every week. It's his second time doing this. So, like, I don't know when the first time he did it. I wasn't following him at that time. But now I'm like, oh, damn, he's really trying to do this. And 30 a week, a song, a new song every week is very ambitious.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Shout out to Isaiah Mostafa. I'll check you out, man.
Yeah, man, for sure. I'll actually share you a song right after this, because it's have you heard of So Far Sounds? Sorry, I'm getting caught up, but have you heard of So Far Sounds?
I have, yes.
Have you checked it out yet? Not yet.
No, but I'm aware of it.
Definitely, man. I didn't see him at a show. I been to a couple of So Far Sounds show, and on their Instagram they finally played one of his songs, and I'm like, oh snap, gotta check this dude out.
That's what's up. Yeah, send that to me
for sure. I got you. His question for you is, how have your poops been?
My poops?
Yeah, your poops, man. That's the question. So how have your poops been? They've been stressful. They've been relaxing. But yeah.
I actually had...
He's that kind of guy. So shout out to Isaiah.
Dude, I had butt piss the other day.
Oh,
it was awful. I don't even know what I ate. If I had... I had sinigang. Mm-hmm. And I had a ton of chips. So I think like my sodium levels were just like off the charts. Yeah. So yeah, I had a chorro, as the Mexicans call it, the runs. Bad, man. So but we're better now, you know, we're healing. We're all right. And I'll tell you this, my dog's poops never been more solid. And after a year, this is my first dog, like it's kind of weird, and maybe it's like a little insight into parenthood. Mm-hmm. When your fur baby's poops are solid, you're on top of the world. It's like the best feeling ever, because it's like, oh, they're eating right, they're healthy, like everything's going on right, like everything inside of them's going on the right way, and everything's functioning properly.
Yeah, you're taking care of them, man, to the, you know, most optimal level.
Exactly. And his poop says so.
But no, I hear you, man. You know, being our age, I'm turning 34 this year too, so yeah, it's the way our diets kind of change. Look, you know, my poops are kind of frustrating sometimes, man. I'm not gonna lie.
You got some grumpies.
That's a good way to put it, but yes I do. So much so where I feel like I'm at that point where I gotta call my doctor just to make sure everything's all right.
Bro, you know what saved my life? Not saved my life, but it changed my life, was a psyllium husk tablets.
Psyllium husk, okay.
It's like a fungus root or something, and they dry it up and they mash it up, and it's high fiber, and it just, it's like a submarine.
I got you. I will check that out, Doc. But for sure. Second to last question for you, Brian, is what would you like to ask the next guest on 34 Questions?
Ooh, I should have seen this coming. What is the best book you've read lately?
What is the best you've read? I'm just writing it down.
Or you know what? Let's make it more broad. What's the best thing you've read lately? Can't assume everybody reads books.
I hear you. Gotcha. What's the best book? Best thing you've read lately? Man, I like to answer this last question too. And I mean, to be honest with you, it's that book I mentioned earlier, and I haven't been really reading it, just more listening to it. But yeah, this is my first book where I've been trying to listen, like it's an audible. So it's a different experience for me. And I don't know like how you feel about it. I don't know if you do audible books too, but yeah.
I got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, lay it on me, man. I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this. Like, yeah, how do you feel about it? Before I go into it.
yeah. I don't call it reading, because the act of reading requires so much interpretation of the reader. So when you're reading it on the page, your mind, the inner voice in your mind is interpreting it and even reading it in a particular tone. Back to yourself, right? And so the way that you read it, it's really you're reading it, right? Mm-hmm. And audiobooks are another form of absorbing narrative information, but you're listening. And the main difference, I actually think that self-help books are probably the best form of literature to listen to, just because it's very it's not so interpretive, right? It tends to be more clean cut. It tends to be more black and white in terms of the information it's giving you. It's very guided and structured. Whereas if you're reading fiction, like even Harry Potter, for example, right? Like the voice actor for a Harry Potter book, they have a particular accent. They put certain emphasis on different words within a sentence. They have a certain tone when they deliver a line that may sound angrier or sadder than you would have read it in your own mind, thus changing your interpretation of the book, or really dictating the interpretation of the book for you. So it's very entertaining, but you're not as engaged. And the reason I know that is because as soon as you start what's the word I'm looking for? As soon as you start kind of spacing out of the audiobook, you're lost. Like once you like key back into the story, you're lost because there isn't like a stream of consciousness that's coming directly from your mind. It's being dictated to you. So it's kind of like watching a movie, but your mind is so much more likely to wander in that way. I'll give you an example. It's like if you never saw the Thriller music video, you would not associate that song with Yellow Eyes, right? Mm-hmm. That may not have ever popped up into your mind, but the video dictates, it's kind of a part of the memory of the song for you. And if you had never seen the video, then that song probably would sound different in a certain way, because you would have different memories tied to it. You would have a different association with it.
I hear you. Now that makes total sense, because I know when I'm listening, when I'm doing an audible book, like I feel like I have to pause and then go back a little bit because my mind wanders, or like there's a point that's made and I'm thinking about that point for a little bit. I'm like, oh shit, like the book's already, you know, a couple pages like past. So that happens a lot with the audible book. I don't think that would happen if I was actually reading it. So since you helped me with that realization, let me, instead of that book that I've been listening to, the last book I read that I felt like was really hidden for me was Culture Code. I forgot which author that was, but I'm in middle management-ish, I guess. So trying to build culture, trying to build a team, that book really was helping me, you know, find different things. Honestly, what was great about it was it felt very affirming. Like a lot of things that I didn't know or wasn't sure would work or not, this book was telling me like, oh yeah, I felt like it was like, you're on the right path or you're doing the right things. So that was very affirming and made me feel good about myself.
It's very on brand for you, I'll say, because you know, the short chats that we've had together, you're very community oriented and focused. That's where I feel that you can make the most impact. And I think that's true of any person. Like you're very smart in the sense that you figured out that the most impact that you can have is in the people around you and building a shared sense of values and understanding. And yeah, that book sounds right up your alley. In fact, I should probably read that book too, because culture at my job has not been great lately. There's been a lot of layoffs, so they're like constantly trying to further congeal what it means to work at my place. I don't know, maybe this book can help me be a part of the solution
for sure, man. I think something you mentioned earlier about how in your industry they want people who have this innate drive, like, you know, something that helps you get up in the morning, this is why you do what you do, that's very hard to find in the workplace. I've had like 20 jobs for 10 years and I was always trying to see that in my teammates, my coworkers. But yeah, a lot of people out there don't really like what they're doing or where they are, but they feel very confined because that's the only option, that's their only choice, and it sucks to be honest.
I feel very fortunate to be able to have a creative job where I can at least somewhat really directly actually realize my philosophy. And sometimes the work gets boring or rote or doesn't always live up to, you know, driving forward what I feel to be the reason I'm here. But it's easier for me to draw a line between the two than it is for a lot of people. And I realize that privilege and that because I've been a barista at Starbucks. You know, I know it's not nobody wants to be a barista forever. It's a really great skill to have though in your personal life. But I hear you. Do you feel that way in your job now? By the way, I don't want to keep you.
Oh dude, I mean, we're having too good of a conversation, but
yeah, let's keep it rolling.
How I feel at my job, man. So this job in particular was a job I had left about in 2017. I was there, something happened where the security or like how solid I felt there didn't feel as solid. So I was like, let me go see if I could find something better. So I did a few more things And at some point I'm like, no, I gotta be at a school. I gotta be working with the youth. I gotta be, you know, talking to teens about what they want to do and how can I help them get there. That's where I think my decision to be like, no, I need to get back. And, you know, fortunately I was able to get back to the same school that I had left. I had people there who still remembered who I was. So that was cool to get me back in there. So yeah, now I don't think I ever really have a bad day at work. You know, it's always, and like for me, I see it as like the things I'm trying to do, I view as a puzzle and I'm trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work. A big reason why I came back into a school was because, you know, COVID happened. In my mind, I was like, okay, things have to get kind of reset. You know, like kids are different. You know, they want different things. Their needs are different. And for me, I was like, cool, I think I want to be a part of that. I want to try to figure out what's going to work in this new wave of youth for the future. So I have a lot of fun with it. You know, I like getting to know kids on an individual basis and see what works for them as an individual. And like, I know the statistics tell a story, but I don't get wrapped up into the numbers. I don't want to, you know, think that just because it works one way at one place, it's going to work with these kids. So yeah, that takes a lot of time, you know, working in the individual perspective. It's like, okay, I got to spend more time, but I think it's going to be more impactful if I do it that way. So that keeps me busy. And I, other jobs I've had, I don't think I could say that. You know, I would go into work and just be like, oh, this is all? And I just have to sit here or do this? And it wasn't very engaging. It didn't make me feel, it wasn't filling my soul. So yeah, my job right now, I think that's where I'm at. Career-wise, you know, the tough thing is the higher I get up the ladder, the less I work with the kids. And I think that's a choice that I'm going to have to make eventually. Be like, what am I trying to value? What do I really want? I'm not crossing that road just yet, but I can see that. And I can see my supervisors, they know, like, if you're ready to move on, we'll help you. But they even know how much I love what I do now. So they're like, you decide. You're ready. But yeah.
You're a campaigner. That, I don't know if you believe in like the Myers-Briggs test, but I'm also a campaigner. ENFP.
Oh, yeah. And you read me like a book, bro. Yeah.
You get your energy from helping other people realize what their dreams are. What drives you? What motivates you? I mean, obviously that's why you have this show. And that's, I think that's a very special, I'm not trying to speak highly of myself. I'm just saying, like, it takes a very special person to want to motivate other people to find out more about themselves. Like, that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of teaching about introspection. Introspection is a very complex topic. It's you're kind of helping people have an internal dialogue with themselves by asking them probing questions about who they want to be and what they want to do. It's sensitive work. And the whole thing about the statistics, it's great that you ignore that, because number one, everybody that you're mentoring might fall into the positive side of that statistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, like, just because let's say like 50% of the time it doesn't work out or whatever, that doesn't mean 50% of the kids that you work with won't work out. That's right. Not what that means, you know. It's, these are big numbers we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. I think, you know, challenge of working at a public school is that they are very like results driven. They're very like, you know, we need to reach this quota, we need to have these many kids pass. And that's a tough
part. They're products. And the kids are mere products, you know. They're just they're merchandise, dude, to some people.
That's a rough truth to swallow. And that's why I don't see myself ever being a teacher. Like, I don't think I could be in the classroom and trying to do those things. I really do enjoy being the after school person where I get to see kids for who they are. There's no pressure, like grades, or they need to impress me in any way. So yeah, like one of the counselors is like, it's interesting, but you get to see the best of the kids most of the time. Like, you don't see them stressed out. You don't see them worried. You don't see them bickering and fighting. They're just playing games in your space. And I'm like, that's true. You know, they want to explore, they want to experience things. And that's the side I get of them. And yeah, like, just super grateful. I want to show the gratitude that I'm in that position.
And you know what? That's the best opportunity that they have to learn something when they're not stressed, when they're having fun, when they're in a good space. That's the best opportunity for something to soak in out of desire or love rather than of fear or anxiety. And you never really remember the things that you were forced to learn under fear and anxiety. You just kind of remember the feeling. Mm-hmm. But you remember being taught how to fish with your grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
because it was sublime, you know, and you remember the actual skill rather than the threat of failure if you don't meet the skill.
For sure, man. It's a I don't know how it's gonna look. I've only came back to this workplace and been around for 3-ish years. And that's back before, I would only stay at a workplace for like a year, and then I would just move on and keep doing that until I find something. So yeah, as far as the impact, you know, that I hope I have with these kids, I won't know until, you know, a little later down the road. Hopefully they come back to me and tell me like, oh, I remember this. And that's the most gratifying thing, I think, for any teacher or mentor or coach, is when, you know, a student just tells you like, you made this impact without you even kind of realizing it at the time.
That's one of my mom's favorite things too, and it'll help. It'll happen. Trust me. You will make a mark on at least one person, and they will come back and they will tell you the impact that you've had on their lives. It happens to my mom all the time.
And right, and even like feeling that or understanding that as a really like young child, right, is pretty crazy. You know, we remember our teachers, or at least the great ones or the good ones that made us feel understood or heard.
Even just the cool ones. They didn't even have to be that good. If they were just cool, you remember them, you know?
Yeah.
You make more of an impact than you think. It's just hard. It's very easy to forget that when you only have a finite amount of time with the person. So I get it. But trust me, you're making a big impact from what I know, from what I've seen with what my mom has endured with these kids.
I appreciate the support, man, and the kind words. But yeah, I mean, that was a long-winded question, but that's one problem with me. I could talk about work all day, you know, about all the kids and all that stuff. But yeah, man, we made it to the final question of the pod, Ryan, which is 100, 200, 300 years from now, your descendants are watching this video. What would you like to tell them?
I am so sorry that the world looks the way that it does now, probably. If you're still alive in 300 years, I apologize for the things that were out of my control and also the things that were in my control. But I just want you to know that I tried my best. I like to think that most of us did. And no matter what your corporate overlords tell you or whoever's in charge now, we are good people, and most people are good people. Doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter your race, religion, creed, or color. Just remember the goodness in people, and don't let the people in charge divide us. Don't tune all of that out. You'll be good.
Hear you, man. They hear you. And any last things you'd like to add before we head out of here?
This was great. I love what you're doing here. I love that you're connecting with people on a deep level in such a finite amount of time. You have a crazy cast of characters that you've been able to cultivate. And you're a pleasure to talk to. If you ever need another guest and I'm free, and you know, we can reschedule a couple of times, and then I'll come back on again.
Absolutely, man. We only got to two wheel questions, and I'm sure we could go through this and have really great conversations for hours. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I would love to have you back anytime. We can make it happen.
Definitely. Maybe, and I have the we have the privilege of being able to talk to each other in real life too, so that's nice.
Maybe we do one in person. That's something I'm still trying to figure out. I know this.
Oh, I'm down. That's a great idea.
This is very convenient for the most part, but my next step in this whole journey is to try to come up with something in person. But yeah, we'll figure it out, man. I want to thank you again for stopping by, and I want to thank all the folks out there. If you listen in on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or watching on YouTube, appreciate you as well. Please remember to reach out, reach forward, as always. Much love. And we'll catch you guys next time on 34 Questions. Peace. And I'll let the credits roll from there.